Here we go, kids. It's Tube Talk with Paul Bjerisch on WRCA Radio 1330 AM. Yes, well, it's high culture here on Tube Talk. That's the Nat King Cole Trio doing their version of a Rachmaninoff piece, the Prelude in C-sharp minor. And, you know, who would think that a jazz trio would pull off something like that? And I just have to wonder how many contemporary artists of today's ilk would be messing around with Rachmaninoff. Well, you know, it's just another thing you'll hear here and nowhere else. Thanks for dropping by for Music and Conversation. We are the voice of the vintage radio community. I guess, you know, actually the guests we have are the voices of the vintage radio community. I am Paul Bjerisch, just simply your humble facilitator, disc spinner, janitor, and bottle washer. And we are here to bring you what's the latest in the world of vintage radio. We do it each and every Friday night. WRCA 1330 AM and streaming on the WRCA 1330 AM website.
You're the end of the rainbow, my pot of gold. You're daddy's little girl to heaven. A precious gem is what you are. Your mommy's bright and shining star. You're the spirit of Christmas, my star on the tree. You're the Easter Bunny to to mommy and me. You're sugar, you're spice, you're everything nice, and your daddy's little girl. You're the end of the rainbow, my pot. Daddy's little girl to heaven hold, a precious gem is what you are. Your mommy's bright and shining star. You're the spirit of Christmas, my star on the tree. You're the Easter bunny to mommy and me. You're sugar, you're spice, you're everything nice, and your daddy's little girl.
And that's the Mills Brothers. We've had some requests here for some Tex Beneke. So the motto here at Tube Talk is, you request, we will do our best to assist. If you'd like to request a guest, a topic, or a song, it's tubetalk1@gmail.com. Here we go, Eric.
Texas and the Modern Airs salute the Butler Bulldogs with a swell new tune, Blues in the Night.
The evening breeze will shine the get the blues in the night. Take my word, the mockingbird will sing the saddest kind of song. He knows things are wrong.
Well done, well done indeed. That was hot. It's the Glenn Miller Orchestra, Blues in the Night, a composition by Harold Arlen and Johnny Mercer, Tex Beneke, Marion Hutton, and the Four Modernaires on the vocals, recorded live in December of 1941. I wonder if they were listening to that recorded in New York. I wonder if they were listening to that down on Radio Row in New York. You know, you got to listen to something on those sets. In those showrooms. We're pleased to have you on board, folks. Thanks for joining us here at Tube Talk. We do this every Friday night, and occasionally we get some email. We have a little mailbag here. And I've received an email in which a listener indicated that here on the show, we do not think too highly of some of our modern popular artists. He also let me know that there are still good musicians who are young and coming along, and that there were back then, even, one-hit wonders or novelty performers, people who weren't really as musically inclined as perhaps viewed through the lens of old age and history that, you know, we tend to think they were. And, you know, I'll say that is all true. However, I guess the axe that I would say I'm grinding here is that we see many of our megastars today given a pass on the musical side of things and are honored for their celebrity alone. It's not a musician. It is a, you hear this term, performer or celebrity quite a bit. And pop artist. Well, what exactly are they an artist of? Pop culture, pop art, pop style, pop fashion? I don't know. In any event, there are many today who think of a piano as a piece of furniture and not as a musical instrument. And maybe that is, as they say, enough said on that. Friends, Joe Stafford says, "The sweetest alarm clock I have ever heard is a Westinghouse clock radio. Yes, you're lying there snoozing away, and gradually your Westinghouse clock radio comes on. So the very first thing you hear in the morning is music. This is a real happy way to wake up. And if you like your first cup of coffee in bed, it can turn on your percolator too. Getting up isn't such a chore when you can wake up so pleasantly. Get a Westinghouse clock radio for your bedside, and right away you'll begin to enjoy life more. Westinghouse clock radios in durable plastic with your choice of ivory, maroon, or gold, starting at $39.95 at your local showroom. Prices are slightly higher, Western South." And if you could listen to Joe Stafford, you'd have, you know, the Daily Double on your Westinghouse. Remember, you can be sure if it's Westinghouse. This is kind of a crazy song, and I'm not quite sure what Frankie Lane is thinking about here, and I don't even know who wrote the song, but, you know, it is part of radio history. So here we go. For better,
my heart knows what the wild goose knows, and I must go where the wild goose goes. Wild goose, brother goose, which is best, a wandering foot or heart at rest? Tonight I heard the wild goose cry, winging north in the lonely sky. I tried to sleep, but it was no use, 'cause I am a brother to the old wild goose.
My heart knows what the wild goose knows, and I must go where the wild goose goes. Wild goose, brother goose, with his best, a wandering foot or a heart at rest.
The woman was kind and true to me. She thinks she loves me, the more fool she. She's gotta learn that it ain't no use to love the brother of the old wild goose.
My heart knows what the wild goose.
Cabin is warm and the snow is deep, and I've got a woman who lies asleep. When she wakes at tomorrow's dawn, she'll find, poor critter, that her man is gone. My heart knows what the wild goose knows, and I must go where the wild goose goes. Wild goose, brother goose, which is best, a wandering foot or heart at rest? Let me fly, let me fly, let me fly away. Coming and the ice will break, and I can linger for a woman's sake. She'll see a shadow pass overhead, she'll find the feather beside my bed.
Well, thanks, Frankie. And remember, folks, if you're going where the wild goose goes, watch where you're stepping. Dave Terwilliger joins us tonight. He's a member of the New Jersey Antique Radio Club and is here tonight to discuss Radio Row in New York. Dave, thanks for coming by on Tube Talk tonight. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Paul.
You know, many of our listeners who grew up in the tri-state area have memories of a New York that featured a neighborhood that, from what I understand, after World War II was selling over 10% of all the consumer electronics sold in the United States. In Radio Row, I guess, was about 14 blocks or so, centered around Cortlandt Street in Manhattan, and it was a radio heaven and later a television and, I guess, white goods heaven, and it sat on land that was eventually cleared to build the World Trade Center. So we're going to go over some of Dave's recollections of Radio Row tonight. And just first of all, Dave, I'd just like to ask you, how did you get interested and involved in electronics?
That's a little bit hard to tell. I can remember back as a little kid, I was always fascinated by anything electrical. And it sort of migrated into electronics, and I became interested in radio. And for some reason, which I could not describe, older radios seemed a lot more interesting to me than newer radios.
Yeah, that's an interesting that you say that, because I think what you wind up with, too, is, you know, the older radio by its very nature, you know, you turn it around and you can see the tubes, and it almost looks like something you could work with your own hands, as opposed to something that's all sealed up in a box and looks like if you take it apart, you'd never get it back together again. And, you know, I can remember as a kid, and still to this day, it's funny because I take the subway over here, I like to watch the third rail in the pickup on the train arc. You know, there's something about things electrical and electricity, trains, radios, TVs, and stereos that has a certain allure to it. So I can hear what you were saying. in that regard. So it, I guess it would make sense then, liking all things electrical, that you would enjoy roaming Radio Row. What drew you down to that area? When were some of your first trips down that way?
The first couple of times, well, before I even got there, I had heard about it from the older guys that I knew,
mm-hmm.
Especially hams, who had gone down there, and they used to tell me stories about it, and they would say, oh, you can get almost anything there, and that, of course, made it sound interesting. So when I was probably about 15, I went down there, and I found it was quite a fascinating place.
Yeah, and not only, you know, what you'd find electrically down there, but I guess, you know, the characters, some of the merchants, you know, from what I understand, from some of the things I've read, you know, our modern-day experience of going to a store is if somebody can successfully get you past the cash register, you know, it was a good visit. But if you are interested in electronics and you go down there and you probably see in those days guys who maybe had been selling stuff since the 20s and 30s and through the 40s, and you know, they had seen it all evolve and all change, and they had good relationships with a lot of the manufacturers. So these were guys who, if you asked a question, really knew their stuff, I guess, huh?
Most of them did. There were some of the small stores, the surplus stores, where they didn't know too much, but they weren't expected to.
Yeah,
they were just selling whatever junk that they had acquired, and somebody was going to buy it.
Yeah, and the price was right, and a lot of stuff, the timing, I guess, was really key as well, because post-World War II, all of that surplus, you know, that was on government contract, finally, you know, has to go somewhere, and the government winds up selling it off to these dealers. And voila, there it is sitting out in front of somebody's store and just waiting for a ham or somebody who's a radio buff to either strip it apart and take what they need or to, you know, find the communications receiver they had been looking for. So did you see an awful lot of surplus, or was it more finished first-rate goods, or did they just have everything?
I would say there was a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Maybe I should say a lot of everything.
Now, for somebody who had never been down there, what was the busiest time? Was it a weekend or after work, or did it always seem busy down there? I mean, a lot of people have visions of Manhattan, and that was in Lower Manhattan, I guess, kind of, you know, probably north of the Battery, but down in the southwestern corner. And was the traffic intense down there?
I couldn't tell you too much about that because I was in school at the time. And, you know, I would have only been down there probably on a Saturday.
Oh, you never played...
It was during vacation time.
Never played hooky.
No, I couldn't get away with it.
I don't blame you. So, I guess they had merchandise out on the sidewalks as well as in the stores. And was it like more like a swap meet today, or it almost sounds like some kind of a radio bazaar?
Not so much in my time.
Yeah.
Paul. That had... kind of dried up by the 60s. There was some stuff on the street, but it was mostly boxes in front of the stores. You didn't see the big piles of radios that you saw in some of the older photos.
Yep, yep.
That goes back to the 20s and 30s, but by, as I say, by my time, there wasn't too much on the streets, but you went into a store and you might find rows of boxes full of stuff, or sometimes it was just piled up in the store if it was one of the small hole-in-the-wall stores.
Now, did these merchants, some of these guys, even though amidst the mess, was it like an Oscar Madison? Did they have a feel for what they had, or was it, well, if you look in that pile, you might have some luck? Did some of these guys really even know what stock they had?
Some of them did, some of them didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of took pot luck.
I see. Now, I guess the city also would probably have something to say if there was too much merchandise sitting around outside in the streets. But some of the stores that I recall seeing in some of the photos, because we swapped back a few pictures, Arrow Electronics and Heinz and Bolle, and most of these were non-chains, right? Were they independent guys?
Most of them were. There was a Vim store, V-I-M. And there was a DeVega store down there.
Yep.
They were both chain appliance stores.
And DeVega rings a bell. I actually have a a radio with a DaVega little placard on the back of it. And I guess they sold a lot of merchandise and the appliances as well. So what are we talking? Early refrigeration, washers, that type of thing?
Well, not only early, but even current up to the time they went out of business, which I think was probably in the 60s or 70s.
Now, you know, when you talk about living in a city, I guess we all have different visions. And as a kid up here in the Boston area, for anybody who's listening locally, we have a small, condensed downtown center. It's called Downtown Crossing now, and they actually turned it into a pedestrian area because the traffic was just too much, and they felt it would encourage people to shop. But we had a couple of anchor department stores, but then there were certain streets, and we had a street that, if you liked cameras or pens, and they had some general merchandise stores there as well if you liked cameras or you're looking for luggage. Or even one of them had a section on radios and TVs. So you'd go downstairs, and it was much more of a showroom-type look. But, you'd go to different parts of the city, and you'd find different types of goods. So by New York standards, it sounds like this was a pretty big area. Could you spend a whole day just roaming around down there, or was it all very condensed?
Oh, you could spend a day if you wanted to, easily.
Now, one of the things we had discussed a little bit prior to this is, well, everybody says, what happened to Radio Row? And, like a lot of cities, things change over time. And in business, things go from small independent stores to mid-sized stores, and then the chains really seem to take over. But you had told me you had done a little reading on what actually happened to pull the rug out from Radio Row, and that it was slated for development. I guess the Rockefellers were involved, and that's where they wanted to put the World Trade Center. So it sounds like it at the end here, these guys had not only the business world working against them, but they sort of had City Hall working against them. Would you say that's fair to say?
They had everybody working against them. A large part of it was the Port of the New York Authority, which has practically unlimited power.
I see.
And they decided they wanted to build the World Trade Center, and there was just nothing going to stop them. And David Rockefeller of the Chase Bank saw a chance to sell bonds and make a fortune on it.
I see.
And Governor Rockefeller, his brother,
convenient,
had an opportunity to flex his muscles there, and of course help out the family bank.
Sure.
So it really was, as far as I'm concerned, very dirty politics.
Yeah, and even by the standards, I guess, of the day, if you look at what these guys were offered, I guess some of the merchants formed a little civic association, like a little advocacy group, to try to lobby, for themselves and see if they could band together and speak with one voice. But the long and the short of it was, from what I saw, they were offered like $3,000 each as a relocation, and basically, they lost their land. What was it? Eminent domain. They just took their space.
Yes, that's what happened. And not only that, but they only got that $3,000 if they relocated. Some of the storekeepers just decided it was time to retire. They got nothing.
So I guess you'd have your biggest sale of your life down in your store, and some of these guys were at it for many, many, many years. Just watch this all, fade away. So not only did they see, their business and their life, go away, their livelihood, they physically had to watch, their buildings get basically bulldozed, is what it sounds like.
That's what happened. And many of those small storekeepers just went into depression and lost their health.
Yeah,
it's really a tragic situation.
Yeah, I do recall a couple of there's some interviews with the second generation and third generations folks, who had saw their parents struggle through hard times and, build these businesses and have very loyal clientels, and, then to watch the wrecking ball come. And to your point, if they didn't want to move along, they wouldn't even get their $3,000 check. So, oftentimes we try to make things better in the cities, and sometimes a lot suffers at the expense of progress. So, What if you recall at all? I mean, what did you like to bring home from Radio Row? Were you down there more as a browser, or did you ever? Was there a favorite set or something that that you might still have that you brought home from Radio Row?
Well, I usually just went there if I needed something.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I did window shop plenty.
Now, go ahead. Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Did you have a favorite store, or what was eye candy for you back then? Was it still radio, or was it more TV or stereotype equipment?
Well, it was more radio.
Yeah.
But, you know, just looking in the windows and seeing the stuff, even in the second-hand stores, if you will, the junk shops, there was always something fascinating in a window to look at.
Dave, we just want to hit pause here and remind everyone this is Tube Talk on WRCA Radio, 1330 AM. And, you know, that's another lost art, I guess, in, you know, retailing now, because a lot of stores don't even have windows. And you could really get a good sense if you saw, you know, a real smorgasbord sitting in somebody's front window, and the guy would take things out, people would buy things out of the window, and it was full of signs and ads and prices, and, you know, sort of the whole business of the store was going on behind there, but the window was sort of the, you know, the eyes into the soul. You'd look through there. It was the keyhole. You could look in and get an idea, you know, what was going on. And a lot of merchants I knew, you know, took pride in putting together a storefront. And, I mean, hey, in the department stores in New York, and I guess in some of them they still do it, you know, the whole window dressing thing and coming up with a display for the season was still a pretty big deal back then, huh?
Oh, yes, it was. And if you went to some of the, I guess I'd say better stores, like Arrow or Terminal, they had their windows filled with merchandise and a card on each item as to what it was and its price. So you could look around and see what which store had what you wanted.
Now, I have to ask this question, you know, being a radio swamp meat fan. Were those prices firm, or do you think you could go in there and say, hey, Larry, you know, I've got $50 cash. You know, what can you do for me on that national receiver there? Do you think that was something you could get away with, maybe?
I was never good at bargaining, so it never worked. But I think the larger stores were firm price, but the smaller stores, and especially the surplus stores, there you could bargain.
Yeah, you know, that, and that's, you know, what a typically New York thing to be able to go in and haggle a little bit with the merchants. So really, the timeline we're talking about here is, I guess, some of these places cropped up as early as the 20s when radio started to get popular. And this ran up to, well, basically when the World Trade Center was built up. What was the timeline like? When did WTC go up? When was sort of the death knell for Radio Row?
That was about 1966, when the stores were all closed and they started the demolition.
You know, and I imagine that, you know, if somebody wasn't successful in selling everything off, I mean, what do you think happened to some of that stuff? If they couldn't pull it out and bring it to a new location, if they were lucky enough to have a new store, did it just wind up in the landfill?
I have heard that some of the stores just left everything in their storerooms and it was all bulldozed.
Wow. So we could still have tubes and parts and condensers and who only knows what, you know, sitting, I mean, a real, I guess if they ever have the archaeological dig after we're all gone from here, who knows what they'll come up with then.
Yeah, I was just going to say, in 10,000 years, I wonder what the archaeologists are going to find when they dig down there.
Well, you know, at least they could have had the decency to say, we'll do a Radio Row time capsule here and, you know, we'll put this in the corner somewhere, and, you know, someday there'll be some testimony to it. You know, and it's one of those places, too. I mean, I've seen some articles in Antique Radio Classified, and I guess there are some books on, you know, redevelopment. It's mentioned, you know, I guess as an aside in some of these other books that focus on, you know, urban renewal and all. But there are some surviving photographs, especially on the website, that people have put up. You know, you find on the internet, on different sites and people sites, and you know, I've seen pictures, you know, and it's just a classic look. It's, you know, guys who are disheveled and look like they're probably the secondhand dealers standing in front of some of these stores. And then you see a guy who's wearing almost like a lab coat, and he's got the pocket protectors and the big black plastic glasses. And, I mean, he's the dream guy, you know, if you wanted to go in and you wanted to quiz him on, you know, what's the latest features of this radio. So,
He was probably a customer.
He very well may have been. And you know, and it's the type of thing too. We also mentioned this before we talked on the radio. There are very few pure electronic stores left where somebody can go in and find not only equipment but can find parts and wire and solder and multimeters and test equipment and batteries. You know, so much of that has gone online now, and I know there are a few cities that still have dealers like that. But imagine for somebody who is into this hobby to be able to go down and just roam around a neighborhood and that's all there was. I mean, what a dream come true for so many people who were into radio as a hobby. And it was very fitting that it was in New York, too, because certainly all the major broadcasting companies had offices in New York. And, you know, it is the world's media center. And it only all made sense that for somebody who wanted to experience radio or TV or broadcasting, that they had all the stuff right there in Lower Manhattan for you to go get to experience it all. So, you know, as we often sit around here in the radio parlor and chat, gee, you know, it's just we wish we could bring it back somehow. But it's an amazing story, and I mean, I just wonder how much merchandise could they move now if instead of radios they were selling, you know, the iPods and the pads, and it was, you know, the business stayed. Would they have gone on to the further generations? Well, it's all speculation, I guess, for us now. And one other thing I just have a question for you on is, now, were some of these guys, they were, you know, certainly mom and pops, and they were selling off, you know, surplus and whatever else they had that was trade-in or used or slightly used. But there were, as you mentioned, some very legitimate, more organized, larger chains and stores there. So you had a lot of these guys who were real, you know, manufacturers, dealers, too, and they had deals with Zenas and RCA and all the big names. So did you ever find that one was busier than the other as far as were there more people looking for odds and ends, or were there more people, you know, if you lived in New York and you said, well, you know, honey, it's time for new RCA. Did you find more of sort of the first line consumer shoppers as well as the radio enthusiasts down there?
I couldn't really tell you.
Yeah.
It's just something I never really paid too much attention to.
Yeah, I guess as in the mind of a youngster, you're more interested in what's in it for you, and you know, maybe that's one of those things we wonder about after the days have gone by. So, in any event,
but I do remember being in both kinds of stores. If you went to a place like Terminal, which is where Major Armstrong bought his supplies, they had almost anything you needed, and if they didn't have it, some little store down the street had it.
Yeah, and I guess there was a good chance, too, that some of these guys would tell you that you could, you know, like the old Santa Claus and Macy's sending people to Gimbel's, you know, if they wanted you to come back at least to the neighborhood. And while they certainly competed with, you know, the other businesses in the area, it wasn't that sort of malevolent, mean-spirited competition that sometimes I think modern businessmen, you know, get labeled with. So, if you can't get it at our store, I know my friends down around the corner, he may have it. And, you know, so not only would you trust your dealer for having the kindness to send you out somewhere else, it was good for his neighbor, and I guess it was all good for the neighborhood if people would keep coming back.
They called it cooperative competition.
Yeah, which is,
I guess, is about the best name for it that you could think of. And everything you said is true.
Yeah, and you know, I guess, again, you know, probably another product of a bygone era and something that, you know, we'll have to reflect upon. I guess we just don't see it too much today in the communications equipment business, and we don't see hand-wired point-to-point chassis anymore, and we don't see wooden cabinets made out of real wood, and we don't see a lot of things built here, and, you know, certainly... you're lucky if you can find somebody in the store to ring you up nowadays, as opposed to going down to Radio Row, where they had real radios and real radio men. And I guess it was sort of a men's business down there, wasn't it? You didn't see too many females working in some of these places, did you?
No, not that I can recall. You didn't see too many female customers either.
Yeah, and again, that's probably more of a reflection on the time, I guess, as of anything. The equipment and the gizmos and the gadgets were probably the the realm of the man in the household in those days. So, again, something that certainly changed in society. So, you know, Dave, I just really want to say thanks for being on. I appreciate getting a first-person impression of what Radio Row was in New York, and hopefully some others out in the tri-state area who might be listening tonight, if they have their memories, they could find a little solace in knowing that it's not all forgotten. So, Dave, thanks very much for being on. We appreciate your time. Have a great night.
Thank you very much, Paul. I've enjoyed it.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Like a dove nest down on a farm, a veranda with some sort of clinging vine, then a kitchen where some rambler roses twine, then a small room, set of blue. Best of all room, dream room for two. Better than a palace with a gilded dome is a love nest you can call home.
That's Love Nest with the Nat King Cole Trio. And thank you, Dave Terwilliger, for joining us this evening. Dave is from the New Jersey Antique Radio Club, sharing with us some of his thoughts on Radio Row, long gone but not forgotten. Listen in, dealers. Sylvania would like to invite you to come on over to the Blackstone. There may not be such a thing as a perfect tube franchise in this world, but several thousands of dealers think so. They are Sylvania dealers. In any case, come over to the Sylvania Lodge on the first floor of the Blackstone Hotel for a visit. You'll find it a friendly bunch, representing a clean, square-shooting policy, executives who haven't forgotten that they were little fellows a dozen years ago. Pay us a little visit and learn about what the Sylvania line of tubes can do for your business. Well, you know, I'm in my efforts here to stay well-read on the music of the era. I've been reading a book about the life of Cole Porter, and I got to tell you, in some ways, it's way too much information about Mr. Porter's life, but the genius that is evidenced within is undeniable. So here we go, a skinny little kid from Hoboken singing some Cole Porter. This is Mr. Sinatra with Why Shouldn't I? Why shouldn't I?
Why shouldn't I take a chance when wrong? romance passes by, why shouldn't I know of love? Why wait around when each age has a sage who has found that upon this earth love is all that is really worth thinking of? It must be fun, lots of fun, to be sure when day is done that the hour is coming when you'll be kissed, and then you'll be kissed again. All debutantes say it's good, and every star out in far Hollywood seems to give it a try. So why shouldn't I? Debutantes say it's good, and every star out in far Hollywood seems to give it a try. So why shouldn't I?
Written by Cole Porter, beautifully performed by Mr. Frank Sinatra. Thanks for listening in tonight, gang. Hope we gave you a feel for the days of vintage radio with our little stroll down Radio Row. Maybe we gave you a tingle in your ear or down your leg. And in any event, remember, under our plan, if you like your antique radio, you can keep your antique radio, period. And well, as we wind things up here tonight, let's go back to a little bit more of our featured performer, the Nat King Cole Trio. A little something to dream by. Dream a little dream.
Stars shining right above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me. Say nighty night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you'll miss me. While I'm alone, blues can be. Dream a little dream of me. Stars fading, but I linger on, dear. Still craving your kiss. I'm longing to linger till dawn, dear. Just saying this. Sweet dreams till sunbeams find you. Sweet dreams that leave all worries behind you. But in your dreams, whatever they be, dream a little dream of me. while I'm alone and blues can be. Dream a little dream of me. Dream a little dream of me. Dream a little dream of me.
Song in my heart, because of you, my romance had its start. Because of you, the sun will shine, the moon and stars will say, can smile because of you. Can smile because of you.
Nighty night now. See you next time on Tube Talk.
Me astray. If you do, then forgive me and make the world go away. Make the world go away and get off my shoulders. I'm sorry if I hurt you. I'll make it up day by day. Just say you love me like you used.
these two and make a world.